Live from New York, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. The drugs that you're using, if you're the average American, and about 98% of all Americans who are diagnosed with cancer who seek therapy are only going the orthodox route. So we have to assume that these have been well tested for safety and efficacy to justify using them, but also to justify their high price. One of the chemotherapies out there now is 4,000 times more expensive than gold. We'll look at whether or not it's worth it. Then we'll look at fresh fruits, new research, Oxford University, 500,000 people, over a 7-year study. And it says what? Something interesting. I'll share that. Also, there is a scientific report out that shows that a Chinese herb has very powerful effect as an anti-cancer agent. I'll share that with you. And then what happens if you're a man and you don't have enough selenium? Not good. Danish Cancer Society is going to talk about that. And also, we're going to explore ashwagandha, boosting our physical health. And also, we'll look at broccoli, could counter obesity-related liver disease, University of Illinois. So we have all these great studies. Plus, today, would a Clinton win mean more wars? Robert Perry from Consortium News. So for those of you who are thinking, well, she's be the first woman president. Okay, well, we just had our first black president. How did that work out for the blacks? The poor blacks, the working blacks, all the blacks in prison, all the blacks who went to prison. We had a black attorney general. Did that mean that racial profiling was diminished? So this whole idea that we should vote for someone because they're a woman or a certain ethnicity, we should stop and reconsider. Shouldn't we be voting for someone who has the full undivided interest of the American public and not just special interest groups? So when it comes to Clinton, better understand that she is a super war hawk, and I believe we would absolutely have war with Iran, and that we would completely go in and obliterate the rest of Syria to get rid of Assad, and she would start a whole new Cold War with Russia and China. Also, you're using those antibiotic soaps. Do they work? No. Are they harmful? Yes. Who says so? Marquette University in Milwaukee. I'll tell you about that. And Monsanto's evil twin. Disturbing facts about fertilizing the ground from the Organic Consumer Association. From Professor Henry Giroux, radical politics in the age of American authoritarianism. And yesterday, while I was working on doing voiceovers for a new major film, one of the most original and unique films I've ever done in my life, I took a break and someone had sent me a little clip. And I wanted to share this clip with you because, boy, does it nail it. This is a active duty soldier perfectly explaining military suicides in a way you're not going to hear elsewhere. And also from Anonymous. Anonymous gives a message to Hillary Clinton. We'll hear what it is. So you see, we have an awful lot to share. All of it meant to be constructive and empowering. Let's begin. Oxford University, 500,000 people, confirms that fresh fruit, low risk of heart attack and stroke. Big time. This was a 7-year study. When you consider how many Americans die of heart attack and stroke each year, heart attack, it's almost 600,000, stroke, it's right behind it, you're dealing with over 1 million people who are going to die. Why? Why do they need to die? Well, because they're making wrong choices. They're not having the right foods. They're damaging the epithelium, the lining of their arteries. That's where your blockages, your occlusions occur in most cases. So what can help that? Well, potassium certainly helps it, and you're getting a lot of potassium when you're having a lot of fruits. One of the best sources of potassium, by the way, is coconut water. Just a little 6-ounce glass of coconut water gives you twice the amount of potassium as in bananas, and that helps dietary fiber, soft fiber, easy, and it cleanses out. Very little sodium, very little fat, very little calories. That's what they're saying here. So it lowers your blood pressure, lowers your blood glucose, and helps your body and protects your heart and arteries. Good study, saving lives. Then from John Innes Center in the United Kingdom, where they do a lot of good cancer work, they found that the Chinese skull cap, which has been used in Chinese medicine, is called Huan Qin, Huan-Qin. It's traditionally used to treat fever and liver and lung complaints, but they found that it can also act as a strong anti-cancer agent. And why? Because of its flavones. Flav, F-L-A-V, ones, O-N-E-S. That's found in the roots of the plant, and not only do they have antiviral, there's good for hepatitis and herpes, but it's also got rich antioxidants, and it's known to kill human cancers while leaving all the healthy cells untouched. In live models in the laboratory, these flavones have also halted tumor growth, offering hope that they can help extend and improve the lives of people with cancer, even reverse it. Now, we know that the flavones are extremely beneficial. And you can find them in concentrated amounts in the skull cap, and you can take that. So what will help reverse a cancer can also help prevent a cancer. From the Danish Cancer Society, low selenium could lead to a higher risk of prostate cancer. This is a study. And selenium is an essential micronutrient, 200 micrograms a day. But boy, is it powerful. And in this case, when they looked at 784 cases and 27,000 men with prostate cancer, they found that one of the major contributing factors was low selenium. So just make sure that you're getting your selenium and vitamin E, because both can help prevent cancer. Doesn't take much. Also, there was a good study on ashwagandha, ash, A-S-H, wag, W-A-G, and A-N-D-H-A. And what they found in this study was that it really promotes fitness, and it increases the capacity for oxygen and greater oxygen utilization, the less your muscles are going to become fatigued. Hence, have your ashwagandha, and you'll be able to exercise with greater endurance, improve performance. So it doesn't take a lot, and it's good for you. And broccoli could counter obesity-related liver disease, University of Illinois. Quote, adding broccoli to an unhealthy diet could help stave off obesity-related liver disease and cancer. And this was backed by the U.S. National Cancer Institute. And it was published in the Journal of Nutrition. So, eat your broccoli, eat broccoli sprouts, and help prevent cancer. And berry polyphenols may benefit learning and memory. University of Bordeaux in France, quote, polyphenols from berries may offer significant benefits for learning and memory associated with age-related cognitive decline. Two separate studies, published in the Frontiers in Behavioral Neuroscience. The present results show that learning alterations in the early stage of aging may be overcome with nutritional intervention with polyphenols. How about that? So, the takeaway message from that study is that you should be having blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, pomegranates, cherries, boysenberries, gooseberries, goji berries. They're all good for your brain, and they could help it in a major way. And turmeric extract strikes to the root cause of cancer malignancy, Sarah G. Quote, a new turmeric study published in Cancer Letters is paving the way for a revolution in the way we both understand and treat cancer. The article is entitled Targeting Cancer Stem Cells by Curcumin and Clinical Applications. The researchers evaluated the primary polyphenol in the Indian spice known as curcumin for its ability to target cancer stem cells, which are believed to be at the root cause of tumor formation and malignancy. Whereas conventional cancer models assume that the majority of cancer cells within a tumor possess self-renewal capability and to differing degrees, when they did this, it showed that there was a completely different approach and that the curcumin was able to block this process. So, turmeric and curcumin extract have been extensively studied, thousands of studies, and they have the ability to kill various cancer cell lines. In fact, the literature is so abundant that it's both surprising and disheartening that so many patients who are in need of a safe, effective, and affordable treatment are not being given information about curcumin. So you want curcumin, it's inexpensive, it's easy to get, it's completely safe, and yet it selectively kills cancer cells, all kinds of cancer cells, all over the body. So make sure that you're doing that as a part of your therapy. And also, from Wageningen University in the Netherlands, they found that those who were taking dietary supplements had less colorectal cancer risk. And this was a study published in Oncology. Quote from the study, use of dietary supplements is rising in countries where colorectal cancer is prevalent. We conducted a systematic literature review, a meta-analysis of prospective cohort studies on dietary supplements and colorectal cancer risk. And then they want to talk about those who, and these were from Medline and Embase and Cochrane, and they looked at all these peer-reviewed studies, and they found that those who took the vitamins, the supplements, had less colorectal cancer. How about that? There was an inverse ratio, vitamin D, vitamin E, garlic, folic acid, calcium, vitamin C, vitamin A, all lower cancer risk. So, that's good. And one more from Konkuk University in South Korea. Vitamin D deficiency, when you don't have enough, disrupts neurological integrity in cognitively impaired patients, meaning Alzheimer's, dementia. So you want to make sure if you have any kind of brain problem that you're getting your vitamin D. And that's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We have a lot to share today, and there's mounting data showing that antibacterial soaps do more harm than good. What they have found is that you can use regular soap, just a bar of soap, and the scrubbing with that bar of soap is enough to remove the bacteria or viruses or debris, and much better than the antibacterial soap because the particular chemical that was shown in this research at Marquette University in Milwaukee, the triclosan, and that was what is used in there, and yeah, it can kill off some bacteria during long washes, but most people only clean their hands for a few seconds. Quote, there is evidence that there is no improvement with using soaps that have these chemicals relative to washing your hands under warm water for 30 seconds with soaps without these chemicals. So you wash your hands with regular soap for 30 seconds, you do more, and you don't get this chemical because these chemicals are shown to get into your body. And they're not just in soaps. You'll have antibacterial shampoos and toothpaste and cosmetics and cleaners, medical equipment. And it, once it enters the body, when that triclosan enters the body, like in toothpaste or skin absorption, it's commonly found in people's urine and blood and breast milk, and it's in your mucus. And it is dangerous. So stay away from it, and that way you don't have that problem. Something else that we should stay away from are these artificial fertilizers. And yet the average person wants the nice lawn this time of year, and so they'll go out and they'll get the fertilizers, and they'll get the sprayer out, and they'll put it everywhere. Not a good idea. According to Organic Consumer Association, Martha Rosenberg and Ronnie Cummins, who we've had on this program, they're good people. So here's the question. What do you know about the worldwide chemical fertilizer industry? If you're the average person, not much, right? Well, there's plenty of press coverage and consumer awareness when it comes to genetically engineered food, and I think there's a major movement now. I probably post 10 articles a day, 7 days a week, on my website just on something dealing with the quality of our food versus organic when it's compared to when it's then chemically raised with these fertilizers and these genetically engineered foods. So people are aware. But the fertilizer industry, you know, different than the pesticide industry or animal drug industry, people are not so aware. It's a big industry, $175 billion a year in sales. And quite simply, it's a major destructive force in polluting the environment. It disrupts the climate and it's damaging public health. So let's just go through a few things you should know about chemical fertilizers. Chemical fertilizer is the largest industry in global agribusiness. According to the ETC Group, a watchdog organization that researches the socioeconomic and ecological impact of industrial agriculture and GMOs, the world's seven dominant pesticide, GM and seed companies like Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, Bayer, and Syngenta, they represent a $93 billion market, where the global energy-intensive chemical fertilizer industry is $175 million. So they're double the entire seeds and GMOs. And like most other multinational players in big food, the fertilizer industry has secretive, vertical, or cartel-like qualities that obscure operations and make regulation difficult. And this is what they say, quote, with combined annual revenues of over $385 billion, these companies call the shots. Who will dominate the food industry chain? And what does it mean for farmers, food sovereignty, and climate chaos? Industrial mined phosphorus and potash, along with synthetic nitrogen, are major components of the fertilizer industry. Up to 85% of the world's known phosphate rock reserves are located in Morocco. About 70% of potash comes from former Soviet states and Canada. Then you have fracking. Fracking has made U.S. a huge nitrogen fertilizer producer. In recent years, U.S. production of nitrogen fertilizer has boomed thanks to the falling price of natural gas used in its production. The reason for the cheap gas, of course, is fracking, the process of extracting gas from rock formations by bombarding them with pressurized water spiked with toxic chemicals. Unfortunately, fracking releases large amounts of climate-disrupting methane gas and toxic chemicals laden fracking liquids, which are permanently polluting underground aquifers. That's bad for the environment, but good for fertilizer companies. Thanks to low natural gas prices, after decades of importing nitrogen fertilizer from the Middle East, the number one U.S. nitrogen fertilizer plants is growing. The three leading domestic producer, Koch Industries, Orascom Construction Industries, and CF Industries, are reaping the benefits. Who's driving demand for all this nitrogen fertilizer? Monsanto. Between 2005 2010, U.S. growers of genetically engineered corn, largely GMO, animal feed, and ethanol, increased their nitrogen fertilizer use by 1 billion pounds. New nitrogen fertilizer plants are being situated close to the corn and soybean growers to feed demand more efficiently. Quote, it's a highly concentrated type industry, says Glenn Buckey, fertilizer industry consultant who spent 30 years working in one of them. And the Koch brothers, they're the leaders in the fertilizer industry. In fact, in 2010, Koch Industries was named, quote, the world's third largest maker and marketer of nitrogen and fertilizer. And so they're up to their eyeballs in this. And then there's really no enforcement. It's all self-monitoring. And when you get nitrogen fertilizer, it's going to pollute drinking water. It's going to pollute the environment. In fact, years ago, almost 25 years ago, the EPA did a study of farmers' wells where they had their own artesian wells. I believe over 70% were polluted. And nitrogen fertilizer is one of the greatest contributors to the dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico. In fact, recently when I was filming, I went down to New Orleans and I went out on a boat to see how far this dead zone where no fish exists because there's no oxygen in the water. And it's all done due to chemical fertilizer, these synthetic fertilizers, way up in the Corn Belt states, being run off into the rivers. And the Missouri River, the Mississippi River, it all gets down. And then it creates these dead zones. The current dead zone is larger than the state of New Jersey. That's how huge it is. And that's only one of many dead zones. Chemical fertilizers are creating that. Chesapeake Bay is another one. The coast of California and Oregon. There are over 400 dead zones in the world. And these are big spaces. And that's all because of synthetic nitrogen fertilizer used back in the 1940s up to this point. And excessive nitrates in drinking water, common in the corn-growing area of the United States, are known to cause deadly blue baby syndrome in infants. And they've been linked to cancer in adults. In combination with herbicide residues such as Syngenta's atrazine, nitrates become even more toxic. There's that negative synergy, potentially causing brain damage and hormone disruption. And in some rural areas, fertilizer pollution levels are 1,000 times beyond allowable levels, especially around golf courses. And when homeowners are using a lot of these synthetic fertilizers and pesticides all over urban areas. In fact, last fall, the Des Moines Water Works sued three neighboring farming counties over their nitrate discharges by what the Associated Press said, quote, the litigation has provoked intense criticism from Iowa's powerful agriculture industry, which argues that farmers are already taking voluntary measures to control them. And it can harm workers and communities. What you have is you have a anhydrous ammonia, a nitrogen compound compressed into a clear, colorless liquid for easy application. It's extremely dangerous to workers and neighboring communities. It poses explosive and fire hazards as well as respiratory risk, and yet it's used all over the place. And in fact, there was an explosion, ammonium explosion down in Waco, Texas, killed 15 people, injured 160, destroyed 150 buildings. Remember that? And there have been others. And it destroys the soil's natural ability to sequester excess atmospheric CO2. And we don't need it anymore. Natural fertilizer, composting is the way to go. And tillage farming. So just to let you know what is bad that we shouldn't be using, but something else is bad that we shouldn't be using. Meat. Why? I'll give you one reason only. Preservatives. Did you know that bacon, hot dogs, ham, cold cuts, Slim Jims, and most processed and cured meats, well, they're salty tasting. They look pink and they stay on the shelves indefinitely. Why? Because big food uses the preservatives nitrite and nitrate, which produce the pink color, delay bacterial growth and rancid taste and smell, and impart that cured or smoked meat flavor. Now, we've known for a long time, for at least 40 years, that the preservatives become nitrosamines in the body, compounds that cause cancer. In fact, following the 2008 American Institute for Cancer Research and the World Cancer Research Fund found that Just one hot dog a day increased the risk of colorectal cancer by 21%. And there were calls to ban this processed meat, especially in schools. And last year, the World Health Organization reignited the controversy by declaring processed meat groups a carcinogen, the highest risk category that exists. But nothing happened. There was no movement to get rid of processed meats. To the contrary, they actually increased. And something that I see all the time, the big movement to eat shrimp. Boy, if there's one thing you don't want to eat, oysters you don't want to eat, and shrimp you don't want to eat. Well, you don't want to eat anything out of the ocean, but you sure don't want to eat shrimp because they're not coming from the ocean. Most people don't realize that the vast majority of shrimp sold in the United States is neither domestic nor wild caught. It's imported mainly from India, Thailand, China, and Indonesia, where it's farmed. You cannot imagine how filthy the pools are. They're littered with antibiotics, disinfectant, and all forms of chemicals that are banned in the United States. In fact, the shrimp themselves frequently have their eyes removed before being raised in pools so dense and dirty that they may die. Now, the EPA is aware of this. The FDA is aware of this. U.S. Public Health Service is aware of it, but it has done nothing to stop this. So the only way it's going to stop is you stop buying shrimp. And then stop eating animals altogether because you're getting antibiotics. By now, most conscientious eaters know that big food uses tons of antibiotics to make animals gain weight with less feed, thus driving up antibiotic-resistant bacteria and infections. And antibiotics are also used to prevent illness in the extremely crowded and unsanitary conditions of factory farms. What people may not realize is that big food has repeatedly defeated government attempts to regulate and prohibit antibiotic use, and the big pharma and big food, not the government, actually call the shots. In fact, in 2008, the egg, chicken, turkey, milk, pork, and cattle industry stormed Capitol Hill over the proposal to prohibit the use of Cefrazil and Keflex, important human drugs that claiming they could, quote, not farm without the drugs, and they won. So you end up eating something that has got the drug in it. Not good. Of course, shouldn't be eating that at all. And also for those of you who have cancer and you're told, well, we've got this new drug and it's really powerful and it's beneficial. Well, what we found was that we took a careful look at this. Sayer G from Green Med Info. And there's a drug out there, chemotherapy agent. It's known as Yervoy, Y-E-R-V-O-Y. It cost $120,000 for a course of treatment. Wow. And yet, I cannot find where it's really, doesn't reverse any cancer. It's got very serious side effects. And if you read the Journal of Clinical Oncology, found that 85% of the patients receiving it had immune-related adverse effects, over 35% requiring systematic corticosteroids, and 10% anti-tumor necrosis alpha therapy, essentially trying to save them from the deleterious side effects of the treatment. And yet, at the end of everything, it did not give them years of life. It was only some months extra, and that's it. But that's not even confirmed by the evidence that never existed. What was the clinical evidence produced by the manufacturer, which was Bristol-Myers Squibb, to substantiate their claim that it gave you a couple, you know, five extra months? Quote, the possibility of long-term survival. Ah, so they couched it, possibility. Well, show us the evidence where it extends it. But you're charging 4,000 times more than gold. It's just a racket, and that's unfortunate, but that's the entire cancer industry. I'm Gary Nall. Now, we're going to go over, and we're going to listen to a vet, an active vet. He's driving a car, and he's got this little camera that he's, I guess it's on his telephone, and he's telling us about what he believes is the real cause of suicide in all these vets. Let's listen to him. It's a short piece. It's worth hearing his perspective.
Soldier suicide and why it happens. The real reasons behind many of the suicides and the reasons that the Army, the military in general, never seems to want to talk about. Because I just went through another suicide prevention class, same old dish, same old video I've probably seen like 100 times now, where you have these people who are talking about their cases where they wanted to kill themselves, or where this person killed themselves, and blah, blah. But they don't talk about the real reasons. The reasons these soldiers are killing themselves is because you're sending them away to unwinnable wars, undeclared wars, and when they get back, what do? Oh, you give them 5 bottles of pills. What do these 5 bottles of pills have as a side effect? Suicide. So if you've got some back pain from walking up the goddamn mountains of Afghanistan, hey, when you get back, that's okay. We'll just give you some pills that'll make you want to and kill yourself. But no one wants to talk about that in the military. They don't. Because it's all money. They don't give it about you. They don't. They're the ones who put out these videos, and that's why they're not going to talk about it, because they know that they're the fucking problem. Because they know that they're in bed with Big Pharma, and the pharmaceutical companies don't give a shit about you either. It's all about the fuck money. That's all it's ever been about. That's all any of this is about. So when they show you these stupid little up videos, and no offense to any of these people who have killed themselves or had family members kill themselves, it's not what I mean by it. You need to know the truth, though. And you need to know the real reasons, and that is not what they want to talk about. They just want to talk about how to prevent suicide. Let's do a bunch of classes. Okay, we're going to be proactive about it. Sure. Is the Army a little bit better about suicide than they were before? Well, yeah, because they're a little proactive and they give you some classes. But they don't talk about the real fucking issue. They don't talk about the prescription medication. They'll say, oh yeah, one of the leading causes of suicide is alcohol and drugs. But what drugs? What specific fucking drugs? The goddamn prescriptions that the fucking military is prescribing you, and it's going to keep happening. This isn't going to stop. This cycle is not going to be broken. It's going to continue. After this war's over, there'll be another undeclared, unwinnable war. And the same's going to happen. They're going to send you over there. You're going to go fight for your country because that's what you think you're doing. And, you know, good on you if that's really what you think you're doing. You're going to come back. They're going to give you some pills. You're going to want to kill yourself. So it's just sad. And people think I don't care because of how I feel politically, but that couldn't be further from the truth. I probably care more than they do, because I want to talk about the real reasons of why it happens. These people are going overseas, they're fighting these unwinnable wars, they're coming back, and they're killing themselves. And no one wants to talk about the real reasons.
And the real reason? The drugs. And he is correct. At least he is, I would say, probably 80% of the reasons are the actual effects of the medications they're on is suicide and rage and psychoses. And then you wonder why so many ex-vets are in prison or why they go home and they beat their family up. And there was one particular episode. I was filming a vet, and he said, you know, I used to have a nice home in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. I was a welder, had a good job. I was earning good money. Even had a swimming pool in my backyard. He said, I went because I thought I was doing the right thing. I went to fight in Afghanistan, then Iraq. I had 5 tours of duty. I saw a lot of stuff that I had a hard time living with. There's a culture that you don't talk about what bad other people around you have done. You can't talk about it because the nature of the Army was that you keep it to yourself. And he said, I saw it all. I saw the sexual abuse of the people there. I saw the killing of people. I saw things that in the United States, a person spent the rest of life in prison, and it was just common. And that bothered me. Then I got home, and I started taking some meds because of the nightmares I was having. I couldn't sleep, and the meds made me just go off. And then I started yelling and screaming at my family. It got so bad that even after therapy, my wife said, out. And so there I found myself out. I couldn't work. I was angry, rageful. wanted to hurt people. And then one day I just found myself destitute. No money, no friends, everything gone. And I heard that there was a place where some other vets were hanging out, and I came there. And I've been off the meds, and I feel fine now. And all these guys, talk with any of them. And I did. There were like 20 of them in this one little group, all vets, men and women. They all said the same thing. When they were on the meds, they felt like hurting other people, hurting themselves. And 24 a day are killing themselves. Not a word about the true cause of this in the mainstream media, and it's not going to, because it would mean that they would have to be culpable of giving the wrong course of therapy, and the pharmaceutical company is not going to allow them to have any hearings that would cause this to change. So good for him for having, even though we had to delete an awful lot because we're on a lot of radio stations that have very strict standards, so I'm sorry for that, but he was angry, and rightfully so, but at least we got his message out. This is another message. This is a message from a group of people that you don't want to get on the wrong side of, and they're giving Hillary Clinton some information here. Let's hear what Anonymous has to say about Hillary Clinton.
Conflict in the Middle East, ongoing threats of violent extremism and nuclear proliferation, global recession, climate change, hunger and disease, and a widening gap between the rich and the poor. All of these challenges affect America's security and prosperity, and they all threaten global stability and progress.
Greetings, we are Anonymous. This is an open message to you, Hillary. We know what you and your people stand for, and we do not forget. It seems lying has become second nature to you, or should I say your only nature. The amount of times you have been caught out is astonishing. You act like you will benefit the human collective, and many believe and blindly support you, but we know your real intentions, your real motives, and your real plans. And we know you are backed by the same dark suits that are behind nearly every other US president. You will not bring about change, at least not in a positive way, and you will remain a puppet, like all of those before you. Remember the 30,000 emails you deleted. Remember the countless times you have lied while under oath. Remember your shady weapon deals that helped arm ISIS, because we remember it all, as we do not forget, and we do not forgive. You may have the public tricked, but we will expose everything. The truth is about to catch up with you. You thought you could hide from your past, but you were wrong.
I think that we have more than met the request from the State Department. The server contains personal communications from my husband and me, and I believe I have met all of my responsibilities, and the server will remain private.
That's interesting. I guess you forgot that it is common knowledge that Mr. Clinton does not use email. So when you say the server contains personal communications from my husband and me, you are straight out lying. And since we are on the subject of Mr. Clinton, let's see what his Secretary of State had to say after his actions killed over 500,000 children.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but the price, we think the price is worth it.
We see through the tricks, the lies, and the games. We see through your psychological tactics, and we see your desire for power, regardless of the consequences. Your Machiavellian behavior, your tendency to manipulate, deceive, and destroy for personal gain, is nothing new. Your master of the black arts of attack politics, as skillfully clothed in layers of deniability. But when you need money, as all candidates do, your imprudence bewilders even your most loyal supporters. This pattern is a familiar one. Huge amounts of money are raised from political insiders, lobbyists, and special interest groups, but you have a very shifty and corrupt way of going about this. In the summer of 2007, you had to return nearly $900,000 to fundraiser Norman Chu, because it was exposed that this money was made with illegal fundraising tactics. Norman is now under indictment for running a Ponzi scheme. It still amazes us how the media gives you a pass, and pretends none of these things happen, and they accept the Hillary operative line, that it is just old news, and to just move on. You are directly behind so many illegal political fundraising schemes, including donations from the Qatari government, but there are too many to go into right now. We do not want you in power. You will spread negativity to every inch of this planet. The Clinton Foundation was, from the start, a trapdoor for ethics. Now it seems it is also a mirror into Clinton's ethics, judgment, and hypocrisy. You might be inclined to think that I want Jeb Bush to win the election, but that assumption would be wrong. I am absolutely opposed to Clinton or Bush getting into the White House. And your video will be coming next, Mr. Bush. We are anonymous. We do not forgive. We do not forget. To all.
And that's just what we might be hearing more of in the future. If documents come forward, like with WikiLeaks and Glenn Greenwald, that show how corrupt the Clinton Foundation has been, we will certainly support public exposure of that. Robert Perry of Consortium News has this to say: would a Clinton win mean more wars? Quote, the Democratic Party establishment seems determined to drag Hillary Clinton's listless campaign across the finish line of her race with Bernie Sanders and then count on Republican divisions to give her a path to the White House. But if she gets there, the world should hold its breath. If Clinton becomes president, she will be surrounded by neocon-dominated American foreign policy establishment that will press her to resume its regime change strategies in the Middle East and escalate its new and dangerous Cold War against Russia. If Bashar al-Assad is still president of Syria, there will be demands that she finally go for the knockout blow. There will be pressure, too, for her to ratchet up sanctions on Iran, pushing Tehran towards renouncing the nuclear agreement. There are already calls for deploying U.S. Morris troops on Russia's border and integrating Ukraine into the NATO military structure. President Clinton, 45, would hear in the clever talking points justifying these moves, the swaggering tough guy gal rhetoric, and the tear-jerking propaganda about evil enemies throwing babies off incubators, giving Viagra to soldiers to rape more women, and committing horrific crimes, some real but many imagined, against defenseless innocents. Does anyone think that Hillary Clinton has the wisdom to resist these siren songs of confrontation and war, even if she were inclined to? President Barack Obama, who for all his faults has a much deeper and subtler intellect than Hillary Clinton, found himself so battered by these pressures from the militaristic Washington playbook that he whined about his predicament to the Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg, himself a neocon war hawk. And so it goes. By the way, in that one little piece that I played of Anonymous, there was a woman who was asking a question. That was Leslie Stahl in 60 Minutes. Is it worth these sanctions to cause 500,000 children to die? And Madeleine Albright, Hillary Clinton's both secretary and Bill Clinton's secretary of state and head of the UN delegation, she held two positions, said yes. Now think of that for a moment. They didn't intervene in Rwanda. That was a yes for the genocide that occurred. They could have stopped it. Look what they did in Yugoslavia. Look what they did with depleted uranium and killing of people in Afghanistan. And she was one of the most biggest promoters of the war in Iraq, and it was her war in Libya. Look at the consequences of what it was, the best, most prosperous, educated, and least violent country in Africa was Libya, and the largest water project in the world. All that destroyed because of Hillary Clinton. So what exactly do you imagine she would be capable of if she became president? So think about that. You think it's okay, it's acceptable to have 500,000 Iraqi children die? What kind of person says it's okay? And yet, that's who she is. Now, one other thing. The United States stands at the end point of a long series of attacks on democracy. And the choices faced by many in the United States today point to the divide between those who are and those who are not willing to commit to democracy. Debates over whether or not Donald Trump is a fascist are a tactical diversion, because the real issue is what it will take to prevent the United States from sliding further into a distinctive form of authoritarianism. The willingness of contemporary politicians and pundits to use totalitarian themes echoes alarming fascist and totalitarian elements of the past. And this willingness also prefigures the emergence of a distinctive mode of authoritarianism that threatens to further foreclose venues for social justice and civil rights. The need for resistance has become urgent. The struggle is not over specific institutions such as higher education or the so-called democratic procedures such as elections, but over what it means to get to the root of the problems facing the United States and to draw more people into subversive actions molded after both historical struggles from the days of the Underground Railroad and contemporary movements for economic, social, and environmental justice. Yet such struggles will only succeed if more progressives embrace an expansive understanding of politics, not fixating singularly on elections or any other issue, but rather emphasizing the connections among diverse social movements. An expansive understanding such as this necessarily links the calls for a living wage and environmental justice to calls for access to quality health care with a single-payer care and the elimination of the conditions fostering assaults by the state against black people, immigrants, workers, and women. The movement against mass incarceration. We should close down 90% of all of our prisons and put all of the for-profit prisons out of business. We should eliminate all war on drugs and realize if a person's taking a drug, there's a reason. And maybe we should understand that emotional and social pain. There is a reason why we have ghettoized America. There is a reason why we have massive real unemployment of 106 million Americans who are not working or could. There's a reason why people drink. There's a reason why people take medications to dull the pain of life. And yet we're dealing with none of that. Housing, health care, nothing. Full employment, nothing. Racial justice, nothing. That analysis also suggests merging of labor unions and social movements and the development of progressive cultural apparatuses such as alternative media and think tanks and social services for those marginalized by race, class, and ethnicity. The trouble is so many labor unions today, or unions period, have been corrupted not by what they ideally should stand for or once did, but by those in power wanting to align themselves with the democratic machine because there's a benefit. These alternative apparatuses must also embrace those who are angry with existing political parties and casino capitalism, but who lack a critical frame of reference for understanding the conditions of their anger. What is imperative in rethinking the space of the political is the need to reach across specific identities and stop mobilizing exclusively around single-issue movements and their specific agendas. And that's unfortunate, but that's what people are doing. If progressives are to join in the fight against authoritarianism in the United States, we all need to connect issues, bring together diverse social movements, and produce long-term organizations that can provide a view of the future that does not simply mimic the present. This requires connecting private issues to broader structural and systemic problems both at home and abroad. This is where matters of translation become crucial in developing broader ideological struggles and in fashioning a more comprehensive notion of politics. Struggles that take place in particular contexts must also be connected to similar efforts at home and abroad. For instance, the ongoing privatization of public goods, such as schools, can be analyzed within the context of increasing attempts on the part of billionaires to eliminate the social state and gain control over commanding economic and cultural institutions in the United States. At the same time, the modeling of schools after prisons can be connected to the ongoing criminalization of a wide range of everyday behaviors and the rise of punishing societies that are all following a comparable script of widespread repression. For instance, it is crucial to think about what radicalized police violence in the United States has in common with violence waged by authoritarian states like Egypt, against Muslim protesters. This allows us to understand various social problems globally, so to make it easier to develop political formations that connect such diverse social justice struggles across national borders. If I, as a organic farmer, someone who is against gas hydrofracking or against nuclear power or against GMOs or against vaccines, I'm against all things that create injustice or harm. I'm not going to focus on any one. We need to bring it all together. If we bring it all together, then, as Henry Giroux has said, then the radical politics in the age of American authoritarianism has meaning to us. And we thank him for his insights. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I got a really good show tomorrow. Hope you all tune in then. Have a nice day. Thank you.